last week with the academic staff. Was that a useful meeting for you? Yes, no, indifferent. Did anybody obtain a topic or a supervisor as a result of that meeting? All right. Send me comments by email about ways you might improve that meeting in the future. Moving on. So today's lecture is going to be about developing your research questions and executing your literature review. Some administrative announcements. As always, check time plan for the latest room locations and meeting times. So next week, we'll be meeting elsewhere, because we need some extra time for you to give your research question and topic presentation. Check time plan, because if I announce it and I'm wrong, then I'm obligated to be up to time for the place that I've announced. Reminder, your preliminary literature review is due on the 7th of October. So I want one or two pages of a preliminary literature review, and that can include the bibliography. And when I say include the bibliography, I don't want to see three sentences of critical evaluation and then the rest of it is bibliography. I want you to give me your honest appraisal of the literature that you've reviewed so far. And if you haven't reviewed many papers, then I guess you've got some extra writing. So one of the things I want you to discuss is what type of literature review will you do for your thesis. We'll talk about some of the different literature today and what your reasons for choosing that type are. Tell me about what the strengths and weaknesses you found in the literature so far and how it relates to the context of what you're doing. Then if you've already got a topic or research question, I want a short one or two paragraph discussion of how the literature relates. Submitted by Blackboard, not by you. Okay, so if you recall, one of the things we talked about when we were talking about the scientific method is that there's an iterative research cycle. And in a way, it starts with literature review or your expertise in the field, which will lead you to research questions, which in turn will lead you to the empirical methodology that you will use to answer those questions. Then you'll analyze the data that you've accumulated when you did your empirical testing, and then discuss the results and conclusions. Now, the conclusions can lead you back to data analysis. The conclusions might not have been what you expected. You go back to the data analysis and maybe do it again because maybe there was a bug, or you do it again because you found something interesting and you want to look at that more closely. Or the conclusions could mean that you have to amend your methodology and do a new empirical test. Found something interesting, but it's not just going to be illuminated by data analysis. You have to do a new experiment. Or you've actually identified new research questions that are better, or even have to replace the ones you have because they're no longer valid. And then the research question might actually lead you to do a new literature review. And there could be iterative cycles anywhere along the way. Now, because you're working on a master's degree, you have a short amount of time, you want to eliminate, not eliminate, but you want to reduce the amount of time that you spend in iteration. So one of the ways that you can do that is planning ahead or doing some early experiments. So early cycles are possible. Literature review could lead to research questions, which can change literature. Or you start out with the research question, which then leads to literature. So what we mean here is that your literature review is informed by your research questions. You might ask research questions where you don't know what the answers are, or you only have a partial answer to the end, and you need to elaborate on it further, and that will drive further literature review. Okay, so let's go into the topic of research questions. What is a research question? Okay, well, it can be considered a type of problem statement. As engineers, you're used to trying to solve problems. The way that you solve a problem is you have to have a problem to start. So what is the problem that you're trying to solve? Science is, in a way, the same thing. What is the problem you're trying to solve? What is the topic that you are exploring? What is the specific weakness in the literature that you have identified? And of course, you set out to answer it in excruciating detail and in depth, which leads to another question. What is a good question? There are many research questions asked, but not necessarily all the questions. So, a good question is going to be very specific and guide your focus. It should also tell you what the objective is. Also tell the receiver what your objective is. Remember, when you're done, you're going to be submitting it to get a grade. Hopefully, pass and have that MS after your name. Okay. Well, in order to get that passing grade, you have to impress the receiver. Now, while I'm on the topic, no, I think I've got a slide on. To that end, in order to help the examiner see what you're trying to do and say, wow, this candidate knows what they're doing, you want to present your answer to the research question clear and thoroughly. And that includes also elaborating on what research question is start. So, first, in the early phases of your dissertation, you want to take your question short to the point. I believe you'll have an abstract. And that's one place where you have very brief explanation of what your research question is, the context of literature, how you're going to answer. So, it summarizes the most important. Another important come up with question that answer. That is test the experiment. Or it's not going to take several years. So make sure that you come up with research questions that are suited to an answer. All good research questions are built on the current state of the art. That's why you have to engage in a prior review. Or you might have expertise in the field already. That is motivating. And as I said before, the research question is going to drive literature review, and it will be considered a flexible refinement. You'll read some things, you'll clarify some things, but then it might raise new questions that you wind up having research. And I'll go into that a little bit later when I talk about narrative. And of course, there is. What I mean by that is, can you get reliable data? Either there's already data. So you're reading your literature review, they're discussing a topic that are closely aligned with your topic, or they're doing something that's not aligned with your topic, but you realize you can use the data that they discuss. Now, obtaining that data is difficult. You have to contact the researcher if they have set up a repository already. Sometimes there might be paperwork involved to obtain the data. The data is proprietary. Or you have to generate the data yourself like an experiment. And of course, the question has to be limited in time and space. Now, a research question that can take several years to answer is more suited to the PhD. A research question that takes infinite time and resources is not really suited to the PhD. So, you want to pick a research question where there's a definitive and logical endpoint or definitive milestone that you stop at. And then maybe go on for PhD to go beyond the house. So, it's answerable in that there are empirical concepts in the series of models. And what I mean by that is, you have to be able to recognize what the data is going to tell you if you have the wrong answer. Or if they ask the research question, giving you a different answer to expect, you have to be able to recognize. Okay, continuing on with what good research question. It should be relevant. It should be useful to the field. You know, if you can answer how many invisible purple unicorns occupy a chief suit, that sounds like a very odd research question, but it's not going to be very useful or relevant. And in that, it has to make a impact. So, if your research question is relevant, would you find that program prefer the color purple, color red, well, that's sort of relevant to the field, but I don't. So you want to improve understanding. And this goes back to an answerable question. The research question is a good one, you know, appropriate, tractable research design. So you have a research question, but how do you answer? If you have a research question that will take a limited amount of resources, but don't really know how to do that, or maybe the resources are not available, then it's not going to help. Okay, so there's research questions, and there are these things that we call hypotheses. If you call a hypothesis, that's the role of my method. Start out with observation, or you start out with your domain expertise. Something occurs to you that that maybe has occurred to that's the hypothesis. Or you already have domain knowledge, and there are some things that you ask yourself, okay, there's better. So, some research questions that we'll look at how they differentiate from a hypothesis. So, here's a reason. To what extent does first level of programming still an expert at what might be back over from? That old day, play tablet, this is computer program, didn't have that. Oh, got it. Does their utilization of these people make it difficult? Or another reason, how does the size of the focus affect the results of a user study? The implication is, or another research question follows on, is there a minimum or max effect size for such focus? Another question, how does outsourcing affect client effect with that? Okay. Now, as I said before, there are relationships. Research question, hypothesis. So let's look at the first one. To what extent first level programming experts impact the utilization of online resources? Does it significantly change that their experience experience? But what is implied by that question? You have a question, but what is the implied hypothesis behind it? Well, the implied hypothesis is that there's some relationship programming proficiency utilization. External program back over. What is the objective? So the objective follows on very closely. My question, I thought you want to find a metric to quantify external. You don't want to develop a. You don't want to have research questions or answer the pool of yes or no. There might be some situations that occur, but in general, it is better to answer questions with graphs, charts, or relations, and variables. So in this case, there was independent variable, program proficiency, and then the dependent variable was just one line. You have to design the experiment to reflect data. And that might include several aspects, training, experience, it might be like what felt, back felt, unfelt, and required to be logical. That will help the data that makes you a bit. As a side, obtaining data for human subjects is very problematic. Let's go beyond. Let's not even talk about this ethical proof, which you will get. Trying to do experiments is a lot like your cat. Most of your subjects tell us track that staff. Very careful how you approach data study. Then, of course, you can analyze. Okay, let's look at another research question. How does the size of the focus group affect the results of a user experience study? Are there minimum or maximum effective size for such studies? What is the study? What is hypothesis? Well, hypothesis. There's some kind of relationship focus group size quality. And again, maybe there's also a relationship focus group size manageability. And then there's another question. That have is there a relationship between manageability and the quality of the focus? Well, that makes sense. Yes. Answer yes, no. But coming up with a quantity more useful. Because remember, there's always a cost trade-off in everything you do. So maybe if you find a relationship manageability and quality, you do a sort of multi-train optimization or reduce manageability to a acceptable level of quality. thought. What are the objectives of it? Well, once again, you want to find a metric that will allow you to measure. But you can't do any of this multi-string optimization unless you have metrics. And again, you require the data. Cool. Okay. One last question. How does outsourcing device support spec client satisfaction? How many times did Navy called for mobile provider, cable, or whatever provider, broadband provider? And you spoke to someone who didn't really have a great deal of knowledge. You could tell that they were from script. They had this flow chart they were following. Now, when they're talking to someone who's not very knowledgeable in the field, that person doesn't have a flow chart. Frustrating. I know that when I'm talking, they have a flow. I know what that flow chart is. I know that they're helpful. That makes me a little frustrated. Sometimes I want to try to bypass the flow chart. Sometimes they'll have to learn. What are the objectives of the research? Find a way to bypass the flow chart. The objective of the research is find a metric that measures the relationship source by. And again, part C. And again, part C. What takes the lead count? Probably. It's just the presentation of the count. Just give a presentation in a way that the viewer can. I had to review it where there was no. I had to review it where the results were given that could have easily been condensed down to stress. That person did not get. Not just because it was difficult, but because they were not making their point. So I can't make your point. So I can't grade your point. So I can't get, I'm not giving you a bad grade because it's difficult. I'm giving you a bad grade because I can't. And then at the end, what well, this is the challenge. Answering your question. Okay. Well, remember, I said that the lizard pursuit can help put the question into context. That means that you have to do a critical analysis, identify the strengths and the weaknesses. How do you identify the strengths? How are you augmenting strengths? Now, a meta review is a type of literature which don't collect more data. All the data is just itself. So, otherwise, you have to gather data such or gather results. That's the question. The hypothesis, all scientific hypothesis, the way that you test like data is correct, is wrong. So there's something called hypothesis testing, also a medical term, drug trial. Something called the null hypothesis. When you go out and start with your hypothesis, you always got the wrong. You always assume that you're going to accept the null. There's no difference in population concerns. The compelling evidence of data compilation rejects the sound difference hypothesis. Like I said, like we'll discuss in your so your methodology, experiment, or data collect, the analysis, all based on code that you might use, analyze data, graph, but in the end, you'll still work. The graph show you what your hypothesis correct, but it's not going to show you what the implications of the are. What are the implications? What are the implications of my hypothesis? as I said in the very first lecture, sometimes the very best thing, my time, not long, how it works. What's the content? What's the follow-up? Very rarely, you've done this research, now this answer, and there's no point in going, that's not the reason, but the principle is the so, there is a bit of a self from research that role that amyloid protein in Alzheimer's. There is a suspicion that some of the results fabricate for their error and decades, billions of dollars is going down the wrong path. So in that particular say, the amyloid protein of Alzheimer's is wrong. That, find that great, get the Nobel Prize. Okay, so what happens if you don't get it? Well, like I said, not necessarily the end of the line, must just fail. So, I to say to myself, I was trying to develop a brand new to that end, I had to do all the details. One of those I don't need to do that because I have data set. They answer question A, data set. I can download data set. But I'm not going to. I'm either going to question A, 1.3, 4. I'm going to do something novel, relevant. bit about systematic literature review, which is good for if you're starting out and don't have sufficient domain knowledge to guide you. Okay, so in a systematic literature review, you're going to go through the literature and you're going to gather the information using some kind of explicit and transparent methodology. And that's going to include things like a very clear specification of your research question. So this is another reason why we encourage you to develop your research questions early and use that to guide your literature review. You want to do a systematic search of all the available literature. It's going to be a very wide net. You're going to collect a great deal of possible papers, but you're not going to have to read them all. Because you're going to have very explicit criteria for either including or excluding papers that you're actually reading. And once again, this goes back to the critical evaluation literature. You're going to apprise the quality of the study using a transparent and standardized criteria. So when the standardized criteria do not necessarily have to be included in your study, but it's recommended. But I'm more interested, well, I can't see other reviewers. So it's better to go ahead and put the criteria at the very beginning of the book. Tell them what criteria to use. So we have different literature views on by type of rigor, or level of rigor. So at the top, we have the meta-analysis, which has the greatest rigor. Okay. I understand. Test. 1, 2, 3. Can you hear something now? Hello? Okay, that was interesting. I apologize to this. Yes. So I've got this thing on, and I just assumed that it would also be carrying over into the Teams meeting. So let me go back. Okay. Repeating for the people who are ill-served by the fact that I was not properly using the technology at hand. Talking about systematic literature review, which is good if you're starting out and don't have domain knowledge to guide your review. Is everybody good now? Back at the home with the meeting? All right, good. Okay, so as I was telling the people here, you're going to be gathering your papers based on some kind of explicit, transparent criteria or methodology. And that's going to include a clear specification based on your research questions. You're going to engage in some kind of systematic search to all the available literature, and it's going to cast a very wide net, which will allow you to accumulate many papers. You're not going to have to use all the papers, because you're also going to have some kind of explicit criteria for including and excluding the papers. And that criteria will also play into your critical review of the literature itself. And you want to use kind of transparent or standardized criteria and go ahead and explicitly state it in your thesis. It doesn't have to take up a very great deal amount of space, but it helps the reviewer to know why you've included or excluded paper. You don't have to tell us about every single paper. Just tell us about the criteria that you use. Okay. Now we're going to talk about the rigor in the different types of literature review. Maximum rigor is a meta-analysis. And the reason for this is because you are going to wind up with a very large pool of data that you can analyze. The lowest rigor is a convenient sample narrative review. Essentially, it is where you select the papers based on your biased opinion of how the field should develop. Chances are most of you will be doing a systematic review. Some of you might do a narrative review, but if you do the narrative review, then you should have explicit criteria that you're using for selecting the paper. Okay, now I use the word rigor, and what do we mean by rigor? Well, there's several different meanings. One way to define rigor is that it's an objective process. And what I mean by that is it's not biased. So I talked about how a narrative review can be biased. You can do a relatively unbiased narrative review as long as you're being transparent about what it is you're selecting and why. Or it could be biased if you have a good reason for it. Like, precise. Okay, so precise means that it's well focused. But precision is not the same thing as accurate. So you could be precise and inaccurate. You could have a very good focus on the wrong thing. Or you can be accurate without being precise. You're focused on the right thing, but you're not very well focused on the right thing. So precision and accuracy together, you are very well focused and you're focused on the thing that you should be focused on. It will conform to standards. What standards? Well, it depends on what research, depends upon the standards in your field. This is something you'll discuss. Reliable. What do I mean by reliable? Well, it's reproducible. So, rigorous means it's objective, precise, accurate, conforms to the standards that are in place, and is reproducible. Yay! Okay, what type should you use? Well, the factors in making which type of literature review to use. What is the purpose of the paper? So, maybe you're doing a survey, maybe you're doing your master's thesis research, maybe you're writing a position paper. Each of these things have different levels of rigor, each of these things have different types of reviews. The nature of the field is very well defined and fuzzy. So, new novel fields can tend to be very fuzzy. Well-established fields tend to be very well defined. Your knowledge of the field. If you already have domain expertise, maybe you've actually already published a paper, you probably get away with doing a narrative review as long as it's thorough. Or the methodological tradition, whether you're doing qualitative or quantitative analysis, that can also drive the type of review. What is the tradition in your discipline? Some disciplines require meta-analysis. Some might need a narrative review. Meta-analysis. Well, that requires pre-existing quantitative studies. Can't do meta-analysis in a brand new field when there's no published papers. And of course, you must have knowledge of the field to start with, otherwise how are you going to gather these papers? And what you're doing is, well, hopefully, the field that you're in and your discipline is mature, well-established, conducts good science, and what you do with your meta-analysis is that you're establishing support for the prevailing theory in the field. Or, in the case of the reproducibility project, you're undermining the support in the field. But that's an important thing to do in order to maintain the integrity of science if it should be undermined, if it should be brought to. Okay, systematic literature review. It's going to be a comprehensive survey of the field based on the methodology that you've essentially selected. So when you do software engineering, when you start out on a task, you have requirements and specifications. So when we talk about the methodological approach, when we talk about the criteria that you're using, these are like the requirements and specifications. You also engage in a systematic literature review if you have relatively limited prior knowledge. You don't know where to look in a narrative review if you don't have sufficient prior knowledge. So the systematic review will allow you to engage in a study from scratch. And you can use it in both qualitative and quantitative research studies. Narrative review. So it's a construction of your argument based on an existing line of work. So you have a very specific argument you want to make. You have a specific position that you're taking. And you are being biased in that you're looking at papers that support that position. Or you're not being biased, taking papers that support that position, and you're also taking papers that undermine that position, but you're making an argument about why the papers that are undermining the position should either be ignored or they should be taken into account, but they're not as strong as the papers that are in support. You're not getting all the papers in that position. You have a very specific viewpoint that you're pursuing, but it is unbiased in that you're getting the papers that authors agree with. Of course, it's driven by your expertise. So, how do you know which paper is supporting or undermining? Well, you have equal value. Can apply to both broad studies. And what you're doing is you are collecting a variety of insights and theories for a specific purpose, for that narrative. And we have a flowchart for executing a systematic literature review. You've seen this before. We'll go over it again. So you have the planning phase, a selection phase, an extraction phase, and an execution phase. We'll look at that in a little more. So in the planning phase, remember, requirements and specifications. You're planning the purpose of your review. So the requirements and specifications that you select are based on that purpose. So you draft the search and review protocol. So you have the requirements and specifications. What is the pseudocode, if you will, for your review? How are you going to find the literature? Then once you've found the literature, so you've done the plan, now you're going to select the papers. So you need to develop rules for explicitly including or excluding papers. Remember, it's systematic. How are you going to filter the literature? You're not going to read everything. You can't read everything. So how do you select the things you're going to read? So we've already touched a little bit on the planning selection phase. Now let's take a look at the extraction phase. Okay, so you've come up with your requirements, specifications, come up with your methodology, you've come up with your criteria, you've selected the papers, you've filtered through the papers. Now that you've filtered through the papers, you need to extract things from those papers. So, you want to find the useful data or concepts that you can use in your research. You also have to assess the quality. This goes back to your evaluation, your critical evaluation that you demonstrate. Then we have the execution after the extraction. What do we mean by execution? Well, you take the papers that you have selected and the concepts that you have listed out of those papers and somehow build a model of the state of the art based on all those concepts. So you have concepts from paper A and concepts from paper B. How do they relate to each other? You've already gotten rid of some other papers. You said, okay, well, this thing has this deficiency in this paper this week. Besides how things lack, how do they fit together? What is the coherent viewpoint of the state of the art you've derived from your literature? Okay, so let's take a closer look at planning. What is the purpose? What is the scope? Why are you doing it? What are your research questions? What are you trying to answer? What is your topic? So, maybe you're doing a survey of the use of technology in serious games related to elderly health care. Or maybe you're doing a survey of methodology used for the evaluation of technology in serious games. So we have serious games, we have technology, but we've got two different kinds of focus here. On one, we've got the focus on elderly care. On the other, we've got a focus on the evaluation itself. Another important aspect. Who is the audience for the paper? So your thesis audience are going to be academics, people who are essentially like your supervisor, but in other universities, or like your supervisor here. So when you submit your thesis, there will be an internal examiner and an external examiner who review it. The internal examiner will be somebody probably from ED, or it could be someone else in NTNU. And then the external examiner might be someone from University of Oslo, or it could be someone from Christiana. So who are you trying to impress? That's something to keep in mind as you not only write your paper, but when you select the literature. So what kinds of data are you going to use? Now, if you were writing a paper to try and teach people how to do things, if you were writing a paper to teach people how to use containers, let's say, then one of the things that you would lean heavily upon are the tutorials that are already out there. Because the audience for what you're writing are not people who are essentially reviewing your thesis, they're people who want to learn how to do it. But in your case, the audience are going to be academic, so you lean heavily on the academic literature. One of the things that I don't like to see that I review are many references to Wikipedia, or many references to blogs. They're okay in very limited amounts, but they should not be your primary sources. Your primary sources should be journal and conference paper. You're doing science. So, that also determines the media's thought. So, if you are essentially, you know, trying to do an entertaining kind of tutorial, you might be using social media videos, but in this case, you're doing scholarship, academic, science, you want to use research papers. Because a great deal of what you're doing is going to be computer science, applied computer science, you might also be using white papers. Now, white papers are not as, white papers are more along the lines of internal publications at places like IBM, where they haven't actually submitted it to the journal. But if you get a paper from IBM on how to use specific software tool, it's relatively reliable and it is valid to include in your bibliography. So you have to design a protocol, outline the steps clearly. Once again, requirements and specifications, rigor, reproducibility. And of course, nothing is ever straightforward and linear in science. It seems that we'd like to make believe science is linear and straightforward, but often it is non-linear and iterative. So sometimes you might have to reproduce, you might have to repeat, but learn something in a later phase that informs repetition. Okay, let's take a closer look at selection. So, let's see. So in this slide, we have selection. And we have this little flow chart where you've essentially, go back. So you go through selection. You have your search criteria. You have your keyword. You have your tools that you're using, maybe through Aurea, maybe through Google search, maybe through Web of Science, Google Scholar. And you got 736 papers. Now, when it comes time to actually doing your research, writing your, I don't think you're going to be spending more than maybe a month, next month, on your literature review. Even that. And there's no way you're going to read 736 papers. So you've got to reduce that number. So one of the first ways to reproduce this, reduce that number, is get rid of the duplicate. Some of those papers could have been listed more often than once, twice, maybe three times. So you get rid of the duplicate. Now you're down to 496. That's still not my. But not all of them are in the language you're seeking. Some of the papers could be in foreign languages. So let's say we're looking for papers in English. Wow, we got rid of a whole 8 papers. We're only down to 400. Huh. Yes, but maybe not all the papers are papers you have access to. So through our online library resources, you have access to many, many papers, but there are still some online resources that you don't have access to. We don't expect to pay to get access to papers. And along those lines, if you find a paper that you want that you cannot get through the library, sometimes you contact the author directly. They'll send you a copy. Okay, so when we go through the ACT filter, we've reduced the number of papers by 100. Now we're down to 383. Well, that still meant paper. I'm sorry, no, we reduced that. Now we apply the relevance filter 1. Okay, so relevance filter 1, you go through the papers and you can remove the things that are clearly irrelevant based on the source. Like, for example, you're probably not going to be using patents. So all the papers that are based on patent applications, yeah. Subject indices are just indices about the subject. They don't actually contain any research, unless your research is on the subject itself. Get rid of the subject indices. List of recommended books. You know, maybe you're going to be using one or two books. Depends on what your research is about. But for the most part, you're going to be using journal papers. Get rid of those. And so on and so forth. So that relevant filter is going to reduce this down to 29 papers. Now that's really manageable. And the relevance 2 is, okay, now that I've gotten rid of the irrelevant source, I can get rid of the non-relevant topic, something that doesn't apply to the research. And finally, you've got the definition filter. based on the top, based on the description. So the papers are aligned with your topic, but the description or terminology does not align with what you're trying to do. So at the end, you now have just 27 papers. That's still a significant number of papers to read, but that's tractable. Certainly more tractable than 736. Okay. Then the extraction. So you want to systematically extract the useful information from the paper. One way to do it is keyword-based. You know, your research question, your topic, you've got keywords, use those keywords to find information in the paper. Or semantic extraction, the meaning, how things fit together. There's a very specific concept that you're looking for. Those are the ones that you're focused on. Or you can do a retrospective search for papers and surveys that you found, the bibliography record. The chain bibliography search that I talked about. Derived. So, when I talked about the chain bibliography, I was simply talking about going back in time from your entry point paper. You read this paper, there were some questions or concepts that you wanted to do more research on, went through the bibliography, found the research concept, found the concept or question or the answer to the paper, the bibliography. Went on, there's another bibliography. That's going backwards in time to the papers that have that are being cited by your research. But you can go forward. You can use Google Scholar to look at the papers that are citing the paper that you're reading now. And that's also a very good way to make sure that you're doing something that's novel. Maybe some of the newer papers might have been essentially doing the same topic that you're doing. The modified. Okay, and then of course you could have a filter based on the quality criteria. So the paper is of good, well, the paper comes from a journal of good quality, but you've read the paper and you're not impressed. Or you've read the abstract. Abstracts are your friend. Before you read the entire paper, read the abstract. Because if you don't see what you're interested in the abstract, you're not going to see it in the paper. That's why it's very important for you to write a good abstract with the paper as well. So let's say you're going on here, you're not stopping your scientific studies with a master's, you're going on for a PhD, you're publishing papers, conferences, journals. Make sure that you write a good abstract. Have mercy on your other academics. So, what you are going to discover is that you don't have enough time in the world. There are some things that you're not going to be able to do. And you wish you could spend more time reading papers, but you have to go through them very quickly. This is a really enjoyable paper. I wish I had more time, but I don't. So, a good abstract can save time, not just your time, but your good abstract can save time of research. Like me, I read your abstract. Now, it sounds like an interesting paper, but it's not what I put it about. Critique. So, you have a critical evaluation of the paper. You realize that, you know, these papers don't quite fit in. So, I'm going to update my protocol for extraction. As you go through the paper, it's a very good idea to annotate your insight. If there's useful data in the paper, right on the top of the paper, here I can find this given data set. If there's a useful concept in the paper, write on the paper. Oh, and this concept is in the paper, too. It's useful because when it comes time to citing the paper and you're writing your literature review and you're thinking about, okay, so I have this concept here. Where did I read that? It's better if you don't have to read the entire abstract to find the paper that had that idea. You just read your own abstract. Also, note the qualitative, note data type. Qualitative and quantitative, whether the paper is theory or case study, and whether it's a research paper or a thesis. So sometimes there's useful information in that's not published in journal conference, and it's still considered a valid source, especially if you are seeking a degree from NTNU and you're citing another NTNU. Also annotate the methods and techniques. That might be, do not when you do the write-up of But when it comes time for you to apply your own methodology, you want to find out, okay, where can I find guidance on how to do this? You look at the annotation you have, oh, this is the paper that had that methodology that I want to do. And then, of course, you can identify domain characteristics. That might be it, or it might have to go. Now, your annotation can even include comments on relevance and quality. So remember, you're going to engage in a critical review, and when you write the critical review, it can help expedite your review if you've already noted what the quality is, the lack, or the excellent. Okay, then you synthesize. So you've got all these different parts. You've gone through your literature, you've gathered all the papers, sifted through the papers, read the papers, you've got the concept from the papers. Now you got to put it all together in some kind of coherent whole. So even if you've gotten even if you've engaged in a systematic literature review, what you are about to produce is a narrative explanation of what you have found. You're going to synthesize, identify the structures that are in the literature that you review, conceptual pieces that fit together. How do they fit? What topics are interrelated? What methods might complement? There could be relationships within the structure. So you have multiple structures, but commonalities in methodological approaches. Multiple schools of thought, but commonalities in methods. Is there a higher level structure? So if you look at the evolution of life, and it goes back, starts out about 4 billion years ago, and we have these like single-cell organisms that were just these amorphous mass of protoplasm that didn't have the organelles. And then one step of evolution was where these single-cell primitive organisms developed these things called organelles, mitochondria, endoplasmic reticula, nuclei. So this biological system is now a biological system of biological subsystems. And now we ourselves are biological systems of cells, which in themselves are biological systems, the biological subsystems. You have this nested hierarchy. So you might wind up with superstructures of substructures in your narrative. Here's a slide of literature review resources. I'm not going to go through all of them. Because these slides are available on Blackboard, you can download the slides and then essentially use the literature resources. You're not limited. And, of course, your supervisor might have other resources. Okay, so let me talk again about critical evaluation of literature. Your thesis is a written argument for your position. You're taking a position, and you're writing an argument to support that position. You're saying, the size of the cohort in the user experience studies is very important, and here is why. Every assertion that you make in your thesis, every time that you say something is good or something is bad, something is purple, something is blue, you have to support what you say. It can't just be your opinion. You have to support it either by a reference to the literature. So, I am stating this as a fact, and I am supported by this paper that has gone through peer review and has been published in the Journal of Superduperdipity, and therefore it is a relevant source, and I can state this, and it's sort of an appeal to authority, but in this particular case. Or you can state a position. I'm saying that the superduperdipity is like this because my experimental results have confirmed it. Or you can construct a logical and rigorous argument in which the foundation is based on the references to the literature and your experimental results, where you have this logical causal construction building up a pyramid that reaches the apex of your point, your position. And hopefully that is the answer to your third question. Okay. I uploaded the part of the literature review from a paper that we published on cyber threat intelligence. And I wanted to present it as an example of how a critical evaluation of literature sounds. So in that paper, we wrote, the reference of two, so we're referring to a paper in our bibliography, shows that hacker-form derived intelligence is not widely used for cyber threat remediation. So we have this paper, we've read it, and we use that. We argue from that paper that hacker forms of intelligence is not used in cyber threat remediation. So we've identified a problem in the literature. We've identified a lack in the state of the art that we're trying to address. Why does that exist? Why is this a situation that exists? Well, we believe that this is due to vast amounts of raw data. Trying to analyze the data poses a significant processing challenge, and most of the data is even useless or redundant. So it's sort of like the literature review that we were talking about. 700 papers, but there's so much repetition. Some of it's useless, some of it's redundant. Consequently, manual analysis of hacker form data is time-consuming, resource-intensive, inefficient, and error-prone. This is a good example of a critical evaluation of the literature. So my student and I, he read the literature, we discussed it, we found the deficiency in the state of the art, and we explained it. We explained it based on the reference. When is your literature review finished? So you have a thematic review, you have a narrative review, you have an analysis. So the thing is, oh, there we go. It's done on the day that you submit the thesis. So, next semester, you have finished your literature review, you're doing your methodology, you're executing your methodology, you're collecting your data, you're analyzing your data, you're presenting your results, you're writing your conclusions, you're writing your... What happens if while you're doing that, somebody publishes a paper that needs to punch? What happens if while you're finishing up your thesis, somebody writes a paper which they're using your methodology, maybe not your data, or maybe even your data. Maybe they've done used your methodology and your data because you've gotten it from they've got it. And they've done essentially the same thing you've done. And a reviewer is aware of that when they review your paper. Well, hopefully nobody's done the identical report, but maybe someone's done something very closely aligned. Maybe somebody's published a paper that is very relevant to your research, and when the reviewer reads your paper, when they look at your bibliography, when they look at your literature review, that relevant paper is not included. That's going to raise a red flag with the reviewer. So that's one of the reasons why, even after your literature review is done, and you're engaged, you've finished everything else, and you're writing your thesis, it's a good idea to go back every now and then, look at the most recent literature, and see if there's something relevant that should be included. If somehow somebody has reproduced what you're doing, explain that. If there's a publication almost identical, then put a statement in your thesis saying, okay, we executed this research prior to the publication of this nearly identical paper. Maybe it will be sufficient to allow you to still pick. It will be up to the reviewer. But at least we'll give you a bunch. And that, my friend, is the last slide and the last bit of the lecture for today. Are there any questions? Okay, now remember, our next meeting is at a different time or location, and you will be giving a presentation on your research question and your topic. It'll be a relatively short presentation, probably about 5 minutes, because we have maybe 20 students present. So go forth and be scientific. Thank you. And thank you to our audience at home. I'm going to close the meeting now, unless somebody has a comment or a question they wish to write. Okay. Belle de bras. See you all next week.